We have the Florida Roundup just ahead on 91.3 WLRN. Support for the Florida Roundup is provided by the Littlewitz Foundation in support of the highest quality programming to enlighten the public on important issues. We are funded by listeners like you and by the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, encouraging families and kids to choose school lunch. This year, school cafeterias offer lunches with fresh fruits, whole grains, and other healthy choices. More at freshforfloridakids.com.
And hello there. Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Our weekly mission to keep South Florida informed on local and regional news and issues affecting our community with a panel of the top journalists around. This week, they are as follows. Mary Ellen Kloss is the Miami Herald's Capital Bureau Chief, and she joins us from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hi there.
Michael Mayo is columnist for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He is here in our Miami studios. Mr. Mayo, good to have you back.
Phil, always a pleasure.
And Jim DeFeedes, a former newspaper man, now an investigative reporter for WFOR-TV, has a new program called Facing South Florida, which airs on Sunday mornings on said television station, CBS 4. Jim, welcome back to you. Been a long time since I've seen you here.
I know. Usually I get to fill in when you're not here, and this is weird. It's sort of like being here at the same time. Are we allowed to be in the same room together?
The tables are turned. I'd say it's going to be a lot to get to this hour. We're going to have some fun and get to as much as we can as we go along. Let's open up things, starting with the reaction to the debate on Monday. And the nation, the world's attention focused on Boca Raton and Lynn University for the final presidential debate Monday night. But after it was over, I kept thinking, what was the point of actually having this debate in the state of Florida? I mean, wasn't there some significance to having it here? Or what did we learn from that we couldn't have learned before as Florida residents? So Mike, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, there was some symbolic significance in having it held in the biggest swing state around. But it's funny because it was not Florida-centric at all. Well, except for maybe some of the Israeli discussion. But no mention of Castro or Cuba except from the opening monologue by Bob Schieffer, but he didn't follow up with anything related to Cuba or Castro here in Florida. And really not much mention of anything Latin America or South America at all.
Not at all. No extended discussion, at least. Jim, what did you think?
There was a little talk about trade, but the location was just about bringing the press and letting the campaign sort of spend a little bit of time in Florida after and before the debate to do a little campaigning. It was just sort of like a nice sort of place to be in, and it was a nice nod to Lynn, let's face it. Lynn sort of got this debate in part because of the tragedy that happened with regard to losing students and a faculty member in Haiti, and so it was nice. I wish, that's the question, I actually thought Schieffer was going to do that, was going to sort of acknowledge that he was here, and not necessarily to have a discussion about Haiti. I thought about just sort of America's role in helping countries, not in terms of military conflicts, but in terms of humanitarian issues. You know, when is U.S. military, or not military force, but when is U.S., you know, should extend itself in those sort of conflicts. That was an interesting discussion during the vice presidential debate where Paul Ryan sort of said no, that so sort of not just nation building, but only strategically use U.S. forces and U.S. supplies. But I thought that would have been a nice segue to sort of tie in the Lynn University aspect with the larger question of where U.S. can sort of deploy its resources.
And so not one word mentioned about Haiti at all. Not that that's a major surprise. But Mary Ellen Kloss, how did you view it in North Florida?
Well, I think everyone's kind of hit on some of the major points. Of course, it would have been good for Florida to see them hone in a little bit. I think a smart question would have been relating to Cuba. And as we, you know, it seems monthly now are writing about rumors of Castro's death. And we've got this new visa policy that's going to go into play in January. I really would have liked to have heard how each of the candidates would approach that. But we'll just have to wait and see after November 7th and get our answers, I guess.
Not to mention,
on November 7th.
Right. Not to mention the discussion of Hugo Chavez being reelected in Venezuela and not ever didn't even really come up. Was there much of a difference when it comes to Israel, Mike Mayo, when Jewish voters are among the most heavily targeted? There was some substantive discussion there.
Well,
the
Republicans are trying to make it into a big difference. They're really trying to peel away some of these Jewish and traditionally Democratic voters down here in South Florida. And it's funny because driving back from Lynn the other day, there's this big billboard on 95 that just says Obama oy vey, which is, you know, not very subtle, but nothing about this election season has been subtle, but just basically trying to portray Obama as not a friend to Israel and its long-term existence. When I really think that what this is really about is Obama has a chilly relationship with the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, because let's face it, Netanyahu is a hawk, and there is very deep division internally within Israel politically about what's the right course for the future in terms of the Palestinian question and other things. And, you know, the Republicans are trying to boil it down simplistically by saying just because Obama doesn't get along great with Netanyahu, it means he's not a friend to Israel. Of course, Democrats are trying to counter that and say, we stand strong with Israel.
But it's there's a lot of deja vu here. Same thing happened in 2008. This was I remember all the stories about, oh, without Hillary Clinton not winning, this means the Jewish vote is now up for grabs, and John McCain is going to sweep into Florida and win all the Jewish votes and look for a big peel off. It didn't happen then. I don't think it's going to happen this time either.
Speaking of Jewish voters, many of them in the southern Palm Beach area got up very early on Tuesday after the debate.
Hello, Florida!
And the cheering, thundering crowd of supporters greeting President Obama in Delray Beach. This is the morning after the debate in front of a packed house at the city's tennis center. The president urged the crowd to take advantage of Florida's early voting period.
2 weeks from today, Americans in all 50 states will step into the voting booth. But here in Florida, you get to start voting on Saturday.
And of course, that begins tomorrow, and the early voting period ends November 3rd. And we are asking you during this program through the Public Insight Network, how are you voting this time around? We'll hear those responses momentarily. But it does appear the president is going to need a lot more early voters in Florida to support him the way they did in 2008. Recent polls, Mary Ellen, showing it's going to be a much tougher road to win the state this time around.
Yes, indeed. The polls are very tight. I mean, the Miami Herald will have another poll out at the next weekend, right before the debate, or I'm sorry, right before the election. But it does seem as if Romney has had a surge in the state, and Obama is just barely hanging on with a thread, trailing by a thread. And I think that this is one of those states that we're going to continue to see both of the presidential candidates coming in out for the next week. And it's, you know, it could go either way. It seems that it's clear that Obama sees this as a way to stop Romney, and Romney needs Florida. So once again, Florida is hugely in play.
Mike?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, the horse racing point of view, I think, you know, Romney definitely needs Florida. If he doesn't win Florida, I think his hopes are pretty much sunk. If he gets Florida, then it could be a matter of, you know, capturing a few of the smaller toss-up states. But the other thing is just, in terms of, you know, how you vote, I mean, we have three ways of voting now in Florida. And, you know, you could either vote absentee, you could vote early, and or you could vote actually on election day. I think this is very much going to be a turnout-driven election in terms of who wins and who gets over the top. And I see both sides. You know, Democrats don't seem as motivated and energized this go-round as the last time, which was truly you got this sense of hope and change and a historic event and a figure of historical importance, the first African-American president. And again, this time, I've talked to Republicans. I've heard Republicans who say, I'm not really that jazzed about Romney, and I don't know if I'm going to turn out to vote. So whoever stays home in the bigger numbers could end up translating to who wins.
By the way, Mitt Romney spent most of the week out of the state. He had surrogates like 2008 GOP nominee John McCain doing the stumping here this week. But no Rick Scott. Jim, where is Florida's GOP governor in the race for Florida?
Rick Scott's been sent away. He's back to the home planet. He will eventually return and sometime after the election, but for now, he's just not going to be seen. I mean, he was at Lynn University.
On a sitting next to Ann Romney.
But on a serious note, I just did read a briefing this morning that his mother is ailing,
yes,
and that he's
true.
flown up back to Kansas City, where his mom is, to take care of his ailing mom. I believe, you know, sincerely, I believe it.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for making me look really, really bad now.
All right, Mary.
He wasn't going to show up. He wasn't going to show up anyway. As much as that.
Even if his mother had not been ill. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but and
he's not been around so far, and I don't think he was going to have any plans of being around.
Look, it's clear that both campaigns have, you know, they want people to keep a distance. You know, obviously the Republicans have wanted Rick Scott to keep a distance because he's not too popular a figure. The Democrats, after embracing Charlie Crist initially, he's kind of been sent away because maybe they sense that he's not the most popular figure in Florida.
But he had a pretty prominent role sitting right there with.
Michelle Obama.
See, here's the thing. I mean, Mitt Romney will embrace all that is popular and good in the world and put his arms around it, even if it's foreign policy positions by President Obama or whoever is likable at the moment. But to go back to the point or two about turnout, and I agree with Mike, it's about enthusiasm or the lack of and turning out. And that's where I think the Obama campaign feels at least they're still in the game. I do think they're behind in Florida. But I think where the Obama folks feel that they're still in the game is their ground game. And they have a lot more field offices set up. They've set them up early. This was the advantage that Obama had with early money. Romney didn't really get into his money until after his convention. Obama spent a lot of early money setting up field offices in Florida, Ohio, Iowa, a lot of places. And they're hoping that pays off in the long run.
All right, well, this is going to be a chance to correct something that I said last week on the show on our presidential debate special, where I said that Hurricane Andrew may have contributed to President Obama winning Florida in 1992. I was wrong. President Bush won in 1992, but a similar scenario could sort of play out where if Mitt Romney wins Florida, there's still many other ways for President Obama to win the election. So maybe it's not as important as we think. By the way, we want to remind you that your input is welcome along the way. Email us at thefloridaroundup@gmail.com. That's thefloridaroundup@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at @WLRN, and we encourage you to like our Facebook page, The Florida Roundup, for feedback anytime. Our producers do a very good job, Elaine Chen, of taking care of that page. Whether the debate was focused on Florida-specific issues or not, it didn't matter for many local officials. The debate was hosted by Boca Raton's Lynn University. It brought roughly 9,000 visitors to South Florida. Here's Boca Raton's Mayor Susan Welch, who estimates that in the last week alone, debate-related activities have added between $5 and $6 million to that city's coffers.
Really, there's a residual effect way down the line. The amount of media coverage and free PR that the city of Boca has received as a result of the debate is in the millions.
And so what did this do, Mike, for the image of Boca Raton? Anything? Besides,
well,
bring some more money in.
It shows people that there are, I guess, people under the age of 70 in Boca, that they do have colleges, that not everybody has received Botox or implants. And
Boca Raton, yes, where faded beauty goes to hide in the land of a thousand facelifts.
But in all seriousness, no, this for Lynn, it was a chance to put itself on the map. Now, the long-term effects... You know, you go around, and what I did is on the day before the debate, and everybody there is amped up saying, oh, great, we're going to be the center of the universe. But I asked them, okay, can you name a debate site from the last go-around in 2008?
Right.
Nobody could.
That's right, in your column.
And name where the vice presidential debate was held just, you know, earlier this month. And again, blank stares because nobody really remembers Center College in whatever it was, Kentucky. But the point is, at the school itself, it does have a kind of a long-term effect. It gives it a bounce in prestige. It does help with alumni fundraising. And it does, you know, it gives the campus a little bit of an identity for admissions, future admissions, and uptick in that.
And I love the T-shirts that said, from Lynn University students, we've never heard of you either. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. We hope you've heard of us. We're going to come back. Jim DeFede from CBS4, Michael Mayo from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Mary Ellen Gloss from the Miami Herald up in Tallahassee. We're coming back to get your comments and responses to our pin query on how you are voting. Stay tuned. We're back in just a moment.
Mm-hmm. This is the Florida Roundup on 91.3 WLRN, 91.5 WKWM. You can find your perfect match at the 24-hour Mega Pet Adoption Event, Saturday, October 27th, with a night of fun family activities and low-cost pet adoptions beginning at midnight at Tropical Park. For more details, you can call 311 or miamidade.gov/animals. There are creative writing and publishing workshops at Miami Book Fair International in downtown Miami, November 14th through the 16th. Registration is open now, but space is limited. Details and registration at the center at mdc.org and at 305-237-3023. South Florida Theater League and 91.3 WLRN offer same-day half-price tickets at leading regional theaters and cultural organizations, including Festival Miami, Broward Stage Door Theater, The Plaza Theater, and New Theater. Information and a complete list of shows online at culturalconnection.org. culturalconnection.org, your ticket to the cultural arts.
Next time on South Florida Arts Beat, we'll talk with the new Broward County Arts Teacher of the Year, Nova High School's Nina Zashevsky. We'll take a look at the Miami Nice Jazz Festival opening tonight in downtown Miami. Judith Bishop previews the 29th annual Miami Book Fair International, and Bill Nix delivers our Palm Beach County Arts Calendar. Catch the conversation and information every Friday on South Florida Arts Beat at 1 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman, Jim DeFede, Michael Mayo, and Mary Ellen Kloss, our guests. And we're going to take some of your feedback in just a moment. We're also going to ask, and we know that there's day off in school at schools in Miami-Dade and Broward County. I know Palm Beach County is no school there, too, and Monroe County. So a good day to ask educators about what they think of the governor's, Governor Scott's plan that was released this week. We'll be getting into that as well. So certainly feel free to send us some feedback. We're at thefloridaroundup@gmail.com, and we'll find out more from our Public Insight Network folks in just a moment. We did ask through the Public Insight Network how you are voting this time around. And we're also sort of sending out a query live here on the show, is have you received your absentee ballots yet? If you requested them, we're hearing some people say that they have not, at least in Broward and Palm Beach County. People had requested absentee ballots. They haven't gotten them yet. We're looking into that, still in the process of being reported by us and some other news sources. But we'd sort of like to hear from you. If you haven't received it and you did put in for it a long time ago, feel free to ring us up at 800-743-WLRN. State elections officials say over 1 million absentee ballots have been returned to local supervisors. Republicans continue to lead in absentee returns. As of yesterday, 44.5% were from GOP voters. Democrat-identified voters have sent about 39% of the total. Another 16% did not designate either party on their ballots. Anything surprising, Mary Ellen, about what we've seen so far in, as far as absentee balloting is concerned?
Well, I think we were talking earlier about the ground game, and it does appear that the Democrats are trying to make up what they would potentially lose with early voting being shorter this year. They've really made an effort to get out the absentee vote. It looks as though although Republicans are ahead by about 5 to 6 percentage points over the absentee ballots returned by Democrats, they're not as far ahead as they have been in the past. So this time around, the Democrats have caught up, and it looks as though about 10% of the electorate is already voted. And that's before early voting has already started.
Interesting stuff. Now, early voting starts tomorrow. It has been pointed out with the weather that we're having might get off to a little bit of a slow start. You think there are perhaps Democrats, like President Obama supporters, worried about the early voting issues and possibly people not being able to get to the polls because of the weather? Jim?
Well, I mean, the general nature of having fewer days to vote, I think that's going to be a factor. I don't think that this storm, if you're referring more to Sandy, I don't think that Sandy's going to be a major problem. I think you may lose part of tomorrow. I think Sunday's supposed to just sort of be windy, but otherwise generally nice. So as long as they don't set up polling places somewhere in the rip currents, I think we're fine.
Okay. Let's get to our folks from the Public Insight Network. We asked them to respond. And by the way, WLRN.org/insight is how you can become a member of the Public Insight Network, become a pinhead, as we say. Raleigh from Pembroke Pines, the first to join us. We welcome you to the Florida Roundup. Hi, Raleigh. Rolly, hey, that's Rolly, I guess.
Rolly, good afternoon and great show. I'm looking forward to early voting tomorrow and bringing my children along. I think it's a privilege. It's something that we have to value very highly in this country, and the fact you get to take your children with them instills the importance of voting in them. So that's why I'm early voting this year.
Excellent. I hope maybe bring a book or some comic books for them, because you could face some long lines between the first day and this really long labyrinthine ballot bogged down by these Florida amendments. Let me ask you something. Have you looked at the amendments? Have you studied the amendments? Do you know what you're in store for?
I actually have it. And at least we're fortunate in Broward County that we're limited to just the state constitutional amendments. I mean, my heart goes out to the folks in Miami-Dade where they have to deal with those. They have to deal with the county commission amendments.
Well, you have a sheriff's race and a state attorney's race.
No, but for couple, ballot issues. Yeah, right, ballot issues. Initiatives. Right. Initiatives. Yeah, sorry. But well,
in Miami-Dade, we're going to take a straw poll on whether or not we want puppies killed.
And to answer your question, yes, the children
no
will be able to. And to answer your question, yes, the children will be able to read because it's at the Broward County Regional South Regional
there
Library.
So well, you could stick them in the other room. Exactly. Nice job. Hey, Rolly, thanks very much for your time. Very, very good call. Who else are we going to go to? We're going to go down to Key West, talk with Arlo. Oh, is Arlo still with us? Yes. Hey, Arlo, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Hi.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Good. How are you planning to vote?
I'm going to vote early this week sometime. I haven't set a date, but the polling station on Whitehead Street in Key West is across the street, more or less, from the Green Parrot Bar. So I'm going to try to round up a group of friends and go vote and then, you know, celebrate our doing our civic duty there at the Green Parrot.
In that order. Just remember, do it in that order.
That's right.
Can you carry a beer online with you while you're waiting? Or I guess that may not be a good thing.
Key West, well, I think anything goes,
yeah.
Right? You could probably get a tattoo while you're in line.
So let me ask you, Arlo, what did you think about the debates? Did they change your mind at all?
They didn't change my vote. You know, I'm a registered independent. I'm a supporter of Obama, and they didn't change my vote. But I was surprised at how well Romney held his own, I guess, in the debates. I kind of thought he'd fall on his face, but I was surprised at you know, his intelligence and articulation, which is different from a lot of the Republican Party. So in that sense, I changed my mind about him. Still voting for Obama.
Arlo, your cell phone's breaking up a bit, but we got it, and thanks very much for being involved in the show through the Public Insight Network, and thanks for your call.
Sure thing.
And
thank you.
One for us down there in Key West.
You got it.
All right, Gary is, we're going to go from Key West to Jacksonville. Gary is also a member of the Public Insight Network and actually a former election monitor in Duval County. Welcome to the Florida Roundup, Gary. And you said that seeing through the election process through the perspective of a worker was interesting. Tell us what your experience was.
Well, I'll give you the background, and thank you for having me on. Moved to Florida, been active in supporting elections in my previous location, and 2000 came along, and there was a hanging chad, and so I decided to get involved and then went, got trained and became an official person to work the polls.
Okay.
And the thing that's interesting is there had been an effort before 2000 to try and upgrade the accuracy and the timeliness of the counting of the ballots.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular election obviously didn't go so well and put greater pressure on communities to upgrade. And so that's what Duval County did do. It mm-hmm. took some time, but they got much, much better. We have gotten much better.
What do you guys vote with now? What's you got, paper ballots or electronic machines?
We have electronic machines. Well, we have both electronic touchscreens, particularly for those who are handicapped and so forth. But primarily, it's an optical scanner that's the flat cardboard type thing. You do the little circle and fill it in and then slide it through, and it automatically reads what you've chosen. And you get three times, and then you're out if you don't get it done correctly the first time.
So, Gary, you're saying that we're better off than we were 12 years ago.
Certainly, I can say in terms of the efficiency of electing people and having their votes count, yes.
Thanks very much for your call, Mike. You want to respond?
Yeah, can I just jump in? Because it seems like, again, the ghosts of 2000 still resonate throughout Florida and South Florida, where people are very suspicious and conspiratorial, and just the way they vote is very much influenced by what they think might happen. You know, I've talked to people who say, oh yeah, I want to have absentee ballot, but I won't mail it in because somebody could just, the postal service could just dump it off in a side dumpster, so I walk it into the elections office. And then I have people who say, no, I like voting on election day itself, but who were skittish about it when it was the electronic machines that didn't have the, what they call the voter verified paper trail. But now that we've gone to the optical scan where you actually fill out a paper ballot with a, you know, with a pen, they feel a lot more comfortable. But yeah, I mean, even though we're 12 years on, that election still really weighs heavily on the minds of voters.
Mary Ellen, you're in Tallahassee, we're in Leon County, where the election supervisor there, Ian Sancho, has been very, very vocal since the 2000 election about how people vote, and still is critical of the process, is he not?
I think he's been particularly critical of the way they have restricted voting hours. I think he's made it clear that, you know, here we are in an age where it's easier and should be easier and more efficient to vote, and we shouldn't be limiting hours, and that's what's happened. This is the first time since we've had early voting that voters will not be allowed to vote on the Sunday before the election. But other than that, I think we're going to see in most counties the polls will be open for 12 hours a day on the early voting days.
Right, same amount of hours, just different, less
still
days.
Less hours.
Yeah, it's...
Or similar, but in the federal court ruled that there was a similar
Overall, it's still less hours.
But it really is a shame because you're dealing with a lot of working folks, a lot of people who don't have off for Election Day, who can't slide out and take an hour or an hour and a half out of their day. And to lose one of those valuable weekend days on a Sunday really is, I think, an insult to democracy.
Well, let's just call it what it was. The Republican legislature restricted the number of early voting days, particularly that Sunday, because it had long been established in the African-American churches. You would gather at African-American churches, have the service, and then load up in vans and buses and drive down to that.
But you still have this Sunday to do that.
So you have one fewer Sunday. So instead of two Sundays to organize it, you have one.
But it didn't really get it. That wasn't really a tradition because it only started in 2004. So it's not like...
But that had become one of the things, right? That kind of, it was a kind of an instant tradition that came about. And in order to kind of thwart... I mean, for those who think that the Republicans are trying to engineer, you know, voter suppression, especially among minorities, blacks, people who usually vote Democratic, you know, this kind of plays right into that.
Let's take one more call from the PIN, from our Public Insight Network folks. Dale is in Orlando and is concerned about the process of actually the layers of identification required to vote. Dale, what's your experience? And tell us. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you. My reaction to two things. One was that I received a letter from the Orange County Election Board in the midsummer asking that I refill out all of the information on an application for registration so that they could so-called verify my signature. That was the first time in 48 years of voting. And the other was the request that I hand my driver's license to the attendant and have it swiped through a card reader, also for the first time in 48 years of voting. While I can understand the need for identification, I'm concerned about the fact that getting that kind of identification is not free in the state of Florida. As far as I know, I don't know that you can even get an ID card for free. That means that, in effect, we're putting a price on voting.
Yeah, it's a reincarnation of the poll tax is the concern, and exactly. It's true. Driver's license, it's a fee to get one. The official state ID, I think, is a $10 fee. However, that's not the only thing. I mean, if you look down the list of things that are accepted, they have things that are like a picture ID credit card, a photo ID from a college, a photo ID from even a community association. These things will be accepted, but you do need some sort of voter, a photo ID besides your voter registration card.
I know there's efforts being done by church groups that I'm aware of here in Orlando trying to help folks who may not have those things.
And the funny part to me is I think it's a double standard. If you want an absentee ballot, you just call up. They mail it to your address that they have on file. You don't have to show anything. And then you just have to sign the outside of that envelope. And then I guess, you know, they maybe match the signature or not. But you don't have. There's no photo ID requirement if you're voting absentee. And yet there is for in-person voting. Again, does that skew politically? You know, I guess yes. Others can say it does.
Yeah. I'll say it does. When absentee ballots tend to favor Republican candidates, you don't see a lot of cracking down on absentee ballot fraud, which is the real area of fraud in the state of Florida. Instead, Governor Scott and the Florida legislature went looking with a solution in search of a problem that really nobody's been able to document exists.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Dale, for your call and for all of our Public Insight Network folks.
You're
quite
welcome.
And again, WLRN.org/insight is how you become a member. Dale, thanks very much. We may get to some other calls. We have some people responding to either not getting their absentee ballots or maybe we will get some of those feedback in a while, although we have another Palm Beach County ballot controversy to talk about here. Here we go again. The chair of Palm Beach County's Republican Party says that was the first thing that went through his mind when he heard about the county's latest voting snafu. The problem this time, about 27,000 misprinted absentee ballots that cannot be read by voting tabulation machines. Here's Palm Beach County GOP Chair Sid Dinerstein, who says it's another in a long line of mistakes in the county infamous for those hanging chads in 2000, but he says he's confident that everything will be resolved by Election Day.
We, the Republican Party, have no fear that there is any fraud or fraudulent intent anywhere in this process.
And there was an Arizona vendor that mistakenly printed 60,000 ballots, missing a heading above the retention races for the Florida Supreme Court, which is another issue altogether, which we may or may not have time for here. Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections Susan Bucher and her staff have been working to try to hand copy markings from bad ballots to new ones so they can be read by the scanning machines. Here's Florida's Democratic Party Executive Director Scott Arsenault, who says it appears Bucher has done enough checks and balances in place to properly count the ballots.
She set up the process. It's working well. And we think it's going to really be done by Election Day so that we'll have results that night.
And it's being watched by teams of state election officials, representatives of both major political parties. And in fact, while we have Brock, who is in Deerfield Beach, actually he's in Deerfield Beach, which is in Broward County, let's just get his take on whether or not you've had some difficulty getting your absentee ballot, Brock.
Yes, sir. We've been in Broward for 16 years, and the last election cycle, it happened once. But this year, we sent everything in, and it took 4 phone calls to the elections office for my wife to get her sent, and then mine still didn't show up, and then it took her two more phone calls, and she was actually with the supervisor for almost 20 minutes. And the supervisor had said that it's all they're doing is answering phone calls about missing absentee ballots.
I've heard some similar stories from readers of the Sun Sentinel about, you know, requesting ballots, never getting it. I mean, I guess the bright side is that there's still, you know, you have backstops, because if you don't get your absentee ballot, you can still vote in person, early voting, and I know you're supposed to turn in your absentee ballot if they mark it sent, you know, to hand it in blank in order to vote, but you can still vote provisionally. So there are some other ways. But, you know, look, it's a big county. There's a lot of voters, a lot of absentee ballots. That we don't have a perfect mail system. Sometimes things do get lost. But so we will hear about these kind of anecdotal things. Is it a widespread problem yet? I don't know. I'm not prepared to go there yet.
By the way, I've made calls this morning, a few calls to the Broward SOE. I have not received callbacks on that. But, Jim, you want to add that?
Yeah, this is also why it's good to early vote. Because if there are any issues, you know, if, for instance, you know, there's issues with your identification, your polling place, whether or not you're eligible to vote right then, or any of those sort of things. If you do that on Election Day, with the lines that we might have on Election Day, you might not, if you get turned away, you might not be able to circle back around. So better to vote early, try to vote early. That way, if there is an issue and you have to walk away, you can still come back.
All right, well, we want to take one more call from Clay in Miami. Thanks, Brock, for your call. You requested your ballot in the mail. Haven't gotten it yet?
Correct.
And so are you nervous? Have you called, or is there an explanation for it? Did you do it on time? Or
I haven't called. I mailed in the request, and what I was wondering is I've now learned that I could make an online request, but I didn't want to make a second one and have anybody, you know, suspect me of trying to vote twice.
No, you can make as many requests as you want. You just can't vote twice. That's the problem.
Right. Okay. In fact, I did mine online, too, a couple of weeks ago. I have not gotten mine in the mail as of yet, and I live in Broward County.
Well, I figure I'll make an online request, but if it doesn't show up and we get late into next week, and I still can show up and early vote in person?
Yeah, if they haven't
that's,
marked
that's
you
a good
as,
question.
If they haven't marked you as sending out an absentee ballot, then you could vote early vote. If they have you that they've sent out an absentee ballot to you, you're supposed to bring the blank absentee ballot if you change your mind and want to vote another way.
Of course, if I had it, I would send it.
Right, and then the question is, what happens to all those people who say they never got it and it was lost? Then you can vote provisionally, and then they'll make sure that no absentee ballot was received for you.
And just real quick, one last point. Anytime you show up at a polling place and they tell you you can't vote, remember, always demand to vote as a provisional. You can demand, and if they say no, ask for a supervisor. You can vote on a provisional ballot, and they can sort it out later. But your vote, if you don't vote by Election Day, it won't count.
Clay, thanks very much. I just wanted to ask Mary Ellen before we go to the break here, have you heard any such issues going on up there in the Capitol?
Well, there have been problems around the state, various things going on. I mean, the latest thing has not been so much the absentee ballot problems that we've seen in Palm Beach County, but there have been other things with people getting letters in the mail that have alleged that they're not a legitimate voter. And there's a big investigation going on with that.
Right, and this is targeted at Republicans, apparently, targeted at some...
Well, it turns out that they're a couple dozen counties, and they're not all Republicans. There have been some independents as well that have received these letters.
So these letters purport to be from the state, but they're bogus and fraudulent, right?
They purport to be from each of the counties' supervisors of elections. So whoever is doing this has gone in and not only targeted sometimes contributors to the Republican Party, but high-profile Republican Party members, and then done it in a way that gives the impression that they are being sent this information from the supervisor, and it's been targeted specifically in each county. All the postmarks seem to be from Seattle, Washington. So there's an FBI investigation going
there's
on right
your first
now.
Clue.
There's your first clue. Yeah. If somebody sent you something from Seattle about a Florida vote, it might not be kosher.
Never a dull moment when
your
it
supervisor
comes to
of election, right.
Voting in Florida.
I used to live in Washington. Very little in Washington is kosher.
Starbucks coffee is kosher.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, there are plenty of things we may end up leaving on the table, but we want to do into some local stuff and some troubles for a Miami congressman. We'll get into David Rivera's issues and possibly some of the local congressional races and the Broward races as well, and some education discussion, we promise. Stand by. We're coming back in just a moment.
And we thank you for joining us for the Florida Roundup on 91.3 WLRN. We are funded by listeners like you and by Verpluen Lumpkin PA, helping individuals and corporations in coverage and bad faith disputes with their insurance companies since 1995. Additional information at 305-577-3996 or online at vpl-law.com. You can discover inspiration, peace, a new perspective, community, and your divine potential at Unity on the Bay's Sunday celebration services at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. Details at unityonthebay.org. Orchestra Miami begins its stellar sixth season with an intimate concert at the Coral Gables Museum, featuring works by Menotti, Beethoven, and Stravinsky, Sunday, October 28th at 7 p.m. Tickets and information at orchestramiami.org.
And we welcome you back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN Lively Show today. Jim DeFede from CBS4, Mary Ellen Kloss from the Miami Herald's Tallahassee Bureau, and Michael Mayo from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We promised to get into some education stuff and citizens and some other things off topic here. I want to remind you, by the way, that we are reachable on our Facebook page anytime. If you can't get us during the show, like us at the Florida Roundup on WLRN. And you can also tweet us at @WLRN. Me, I'm at Phil Latzman, PHILLATZMAN. Rest of our panel, Michael Mayo, you're at Hey Mike Mayo. And Mary Ellen Kloss, another easy one, Mary Ellen Kloss. And Jim DeFede, the @DeFede, D-E.
Just,
F-E-D-E.
At Defeedy, that's it. Mary Ellen, by the way, let me just say, you're looking particularly lovely today.
She always looks particularly lovely, especially on Thank this you. Panel. She really is, unbelievably. you can't see us, and that's a good thing. All right, you can see Jim, though, on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock, and that's worth it. All right, so let's move on to David Rivera and the State Ethics Commission charging that he broke state ethics laws, many of them while in the state legislature in 2005 through 2009. Jim, you've been pretty diligent about following this story around, following Congressman Rivera. Just first of all, detail for us exactly what's being alleged in these ethics violations by the state legislature's ethics board.
There's 11 charges that he violated state ethics laws. They basically stem from use of campaign money for some personal use. There's also the issue of the contract, the secret contract that he had with Flagler Dog Track, Magic City Casino, to help promote the slots referendum in 2008. He signed a contract in 2006. It was for basically $1 million if he was successful. He never really disclosed that, never disclosed money that was routed from. He had the money go to his company by his godmother and mother, and then some of that money ended up with him, which he didn't disclose. So it's the entanglement of a lot of different issues. He's still also under federal investigation by the FBI for putting supposedly engineering a bogus candidate in the Democratic primary against Joe Garcia, a guy by the name of Justin Lamar Sternat. Now, running bogus candidates is a time-honored, sleazy tradition in Miami-Dade, where it crosses the line into illegality as if you start funneling illegal campaign contributions to prop up that candidate.
That's why the FBI is looking.
That's why the FBI, and there's an IRS investigation into whether or not he paid taxes and the Millennium, the firm that his mother and godmother have, whether or not they paid taxes on the Flagler Dog Track $1 million.
And that could be his biggest problem, because you don't want to tick off the IRS, and that's the kind of thing that leads to federal charges. We saw that was basically the downfall of former Broward Sheriff Ken Jenny, too. But the state ethics charges, again, ethics violations are not criminal in this state. It's kind of a toothless ethics code. So even if he's found to be guilty of all those charges, it's just fines.
And he's already bragging about the fact that it will ultimately be decided by the Florida House, his old buddies, and that. But, I mean, David is one of these rare politicians that is just a remarkable figure, because he'll decry the fact that this is a Democratic conspiracy against him without acknowledging that the Ethics Commission is a majority Republican-controlled thing. I mean, he'll tell you that he doesn't have an attorney and that he's not under investigation when reporters end up talking to his attorney and know that he's under investigation.
But the timing is certainly interesting, right before the election and in a very close race against Joe Garcia. It could tip the balance. So, it's definitely, the timing is definitely an interesting aspect of the story.
Timing is, I mean, I don't know that if I was on the Ethics Commission, this is the time I would have brought it. But all I can say is that 8 of the 11 charges were voted unanimously by the 5 Republicans and 4 Democrats on the board. So I do know that initially they were set to hear this case in September. David Rivera asked for it to be delayed into the October hearing, and that he then tried to lobby for it to be after November, but the Ethics Commission decided, no, we're going to deal with this now.
And you, Mary Ellen, know David Rivera from covering him many years in the state legislature. Any surprise here that this is coming out now?
Well, it has taken a very long time for this to unravel, and as every layer has... As every piece has come out, we've learned more, and it's widened the probe. And I think that is why we are now hearing a huge pressure for David to either step down. There's reports today that Margo, I don't know if we've confirmed these, but the New York Times reported that Marco Rubio is urging him to step down. And I think they want to stop the bleeding to some degree. I don't know what that would mean in the election. We have reported that in the last month there have been people already lining up to run against Joe Garcia in 2 years because they're convinced that he's going to win. But as far as being surprised about Representative Rivera, he has, there have been pieces of this story out there for a long time, and it's only when we started the digging that some of these pieces are actually realizing that I think we hit the tip of the iceberg originally.
All right, Cap or Mike on that one?
No, I'll just let it go.
Okay. All right. Wise move. We got a lot to get to. In fact, you know, we have next week, I think, to talk about some of the congressional races, and I think we'll put that conversation on hold. Jim, you've got a
just to plug it. We have this Sunday at 8 a.m. On Channel 4. We're going to have a debate between Adam Hasner and Lois Frankel. Very rare to have open congressional seats anywhere in the country. This is one of the few open congressional seats. This is going to be a very close contest. It should be a lively debate on Sunday.
All right. Well, the ads are certainly lively. In fact, just to give a little teaser on what you might expect on Jim's show Sunday morning, let's hear a sampling of those ads.
Hasner's plan turns Medicare into a voucher system, putting insurance companies in control, forcing seniors to negotiate their rates, costing seniors $6,000 a year more. Tax cuts for millionaires, higher Medicare costs for the rest of us. Adam Hasner's never on our side. Never.
That Lois Frankel is something. She gave herself a 40% pay raise, charged us for a police helicopter ride to go to a dinner party. But the worst part? Frankel spent over $13,000 in taxpayer money on a marble shower in a private bathroom with her own toilet. What a waste.
All right, so there's what you got.
Get the visual on that. If you've seen the TV ad for the second one, it's a woman like sitting on a closed toilet, and then she flushes it. And, you know, I thought, well, we really have sunk to new lows. And I don't know, as a voter, that one kind of turned me off. I thought it was potty humor.
This race has gone to the crapper?
Yeah, I think the whole process has. All right, so, Mike, while we have you, and we want to get into education in just a moment, but there are a couple of big races in Broward. You know, aside from the congressional, you've got the state Senate race, Ellen Bogdanoff, Republican, facing off against Maria Sachs,
yeah, and the
Democrat
key part of
redistricting
that,
race.
The key part of that is that, obviously, Republicans dominate both houses, both branches of the legislature, but this race, it puts in play whether the Republicans will have a supermajority or not, and if they do, obviously, they can do a lot more things. So that's why the Democrats are really fighting tooth and nail with Sachs on this one.
By the way, Sunday morning, also, the other debate we have, Sachs and Bogdanoff.
There you go. Wow. You better be watching Sunday morning. The other races in Broward, quickly to cover here, the sheriff's race, you have a Republican sheriff who took over for Ken Jenny four years ago. He's been pretty popular. Got elected after taking over for him, but in a mostly Democratic
county. Got elected as a Republican the last landslide for Obama.
Which and going against the Democrats, Scott Israel, who has run for this job.
It's a rematch of the 2008 race. And, you know, I guess the bigger picture is the days of the Broward sheriff being a politician are over because, you know, Ken Jenny, you know, his downfall. So instead of having a career politician along the lines of a Bob Butterworth or a Ken Jenny in there, now we have lifelong career cops in there. But it is a really contentious battle. And it's because it's a patronage job. A guy controls, 5,800 jobs, $600 million budget, and hundreds of vendors' contracts. So that's why both parties, it's a partisan, still a partisan job, unlike Palm Beach County, which went to a nonpartisan sheriff's office. And both parties want their mitts on this office.
All right, we want to save the last few minutes for a discussion on education. As Governor Rick Scott released his plan this week, his education plan, one of his goals was to give teachers the tools they need to succeed by providing them debit cards.
Supported by state, district, and hopefully private sector funds to purchase supplies for their classroom without spending personal money like they do today.
He's calling it the Teacher Supply Program, asking business leaders to invest in it. What are the chances of this being a success and for private industry pitching into this? Mary Ellen Claus.
It will be successful if they isolate this and only pass this. But I think that it's part of the bigger agenda that the governor has. And the idea here was to give something to the teachers that they've long complained about, which is that funding is so low for their classrooms right now that they have to reach into their own pockets to pay for simple things like Kleenex boxes or color crayons. And I think it's something that the governor is wise to tap into because school districts have been cutting back on things like that. The flip side is that in exchange for this, he is asking for some other changes that I think won't be as popular with teachers, and that is making it much easier for the for-profit charter school industry to kind of get a hold in districts. The idea of eliminating caps on enrollment for charter schools is something that has been around for a long time, but it's never happened in all the years we've had charter schools, and the governor is proposing this now. I think what we'll see is that there's going to be a significant push by the teachers union to make sure that if they do any expansion to charter schools, that we've got, you know, the same kind of rules applying to teachers in public school classrooms applying to charter school classrooms. And that is always going to be a big fight. So I don't know that this is going to be over anytime soon.
Hey, Phil, I'm going to jump in, but I'm going to make like a presidential candidate and pivot off this topic to something I want to briefly mention before, because I know we're running out of time.
Wait, put that on hold, but okay. I want to just one more thought on this, though.
He just shut you down like Candy Crowley. All right.
I wanted to get to the citizens insurance thing.
He just proudly did that.
But the final question, though, Mary Ellen, is how focused is this to his reelection campaign?
I think it has everything to do with his reelection campaign. He is picked education because the governor's negative numbers are so low, and it's a very popular issue with voters. More importantly, it's a very popular issue with female voters who really see him in a negative vein. So right. I think that's what's going on.
Very popular issue here in South Florida is citizens' property insurance, as we know. Letters went out from private insurers and citizens earlier this month. I got one saying I'm being dropped by
citizens.
I got one. Mike got one.
Not dropped. Taken out.
Taken out, put into a private pool.
Right. Sounds like a hit.
But
it is.
So there's a deadline coming up, which is actually election day to opt out of this. So,
right.
Mike,
that's what I wanted to touch on. It's going to impact about 250,000 people
citizens,
around.
By the way,
250,000 people who are currently with citizens now have gotten these letters saying that, good news, you're going to be going to this new private company, but the bad news is we don't know what the rates are going to be when the policies renew next year. You do have the option of opting out. So you can opt out of this and stick with Citizens, where you have a little bit more cost certainty, because we know next year that their rates are only going to go up about 10%. But the point is, November 6th is the opt-out deadline, conveniently the same day as Election Day. The state wants to shed and trim as many policies from citizens as possible. By doing it this way, they will get more people, a lot of whom are even unaware of this. They might have thrown out the letters informing them of this because it came from the new companies that we don't have a relationship with.
Right. Now, this is what I got the letter to. The first thing I did was call my insurance agent and ask him. He's been very honest with me. And I said, hey, look, what do you think of this? He said, tell me the name of the company. I don't remember the company, but he said, that's good company. You should go to that one. But is it dependent on the company?
Well, I think people really need to do their homework. Call your agent if you have a good working relationship and can trust them. But, you know, also beware of everybody's motives, because agents also have skin in the game, because they get commissions. And what I've heard is that citizens' policies pay the lowest commissions to agents, so they might have a motive to get you to a new company, too. The question is, you know, do you trust the new company to survive a big storm? Or as opposed to sticking with state-run citizens, rates are going to keep going up no matter who you're with.
Well, it's interesting stuff. So, Jimmy, you got your show Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, most Sunday mornings. We look forward to that. Mike, your column coming out on Sunday.
And final. Well, actually, I'm going to be writing a little bit about the Alan West, Patrick Murphy race.
We didn't get to that, unfortunately, here.
That'll be in Sunday's paper. And also just wanted to mention, you know, I guess...
And your newspaper has endorsed Mitt Romney.
I've been hearing from readers who are a little bit surprised and dismayed. In a county where Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1, we've gone with Mitt Romney.
And Mary Ellen, you got some stuff planned for the weekend as well. Mary Ellen Kloss.
Yeah.
So I wish we had time
about
it. We ran out of time.
And Ozzie Guillen. Fidel Castro lasted longer than Ozzie Guillen.
We have to end on this, though. Congratulations to our news director, Dan Gretsch. He and his wife, Gretchen, welcomed a new baby girl, Iris Kathleen Gretsch, into the world last night, a healthy 6 pounds, 7 ounces, and doing great. And so we hear are the parents, at least for now. Congratulations, folks. To those two, we thank you for listening.
Is she Gretchen Gretsch, then?
No, I think she didn't change her name. Anyway, we got to go. Florida Roundup here at tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. If you missed it today, we're produced by Alicia Zuckerman, Sammy Mack, Elaine Chen. Thank you so much for your help as well. Peter J. Meritz, our executive producer, along with new daddy Dan Gretsch. Our technical supervisor, Bonnie Berman. South Florida Arts Beat is next. If it's Friday, only a game. If it's Saturday, I'm Phil Latzman. Thanks for listening. Stay informed, South Florida.